Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The current debate over the role of money in politics and public policy isn't anything new. That concern goes back to the Founding Fathers when Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, others were worried that great wealth might eventually corrupt our democracy. Rapid City author and historian Eric Abrahamson leads a discussion of the role of philanthropy in South Dakota and the U.S. this Sunday afternoon at the Journey Museum in Rapid City. Abrahamson is co-author of Democracy and Philanthropy, The American Experiment. It's one of six books in the Rockefeller Foundation Centennial Publications series. Abrahamson is principal historian and founder of Vantage Point Historical Services and a fellow with the Institute of Applied Economics, Global Health, and Study of Business Enterprise at Johns Hopkins. Eric, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me on, Carl.
Well, in the book you co-authored, Democracy and Philanthropy, you write about how controversial John D. Rockefeller's idea for a philanthropic foundation was. He abandoned the idea of a federal charter in the face of congressional opposition. Has that anxiety over great concentrated wealth engaged in social projects and public policy changed much over the past 100 years?
It's really evolved, you know, because early on, people were concerned that our founding fathers really aspired to a society that would not have an entrenched aristocracy, where political power really would reside in the people, and where people would have an equal voice in the shaping of public policy. And, you know, it's an interesting part of the American tradition that philanthropy and volunteerism and mutual self-help were a really critical part of the way that our democracy worked. Sometimes we think of democracy as being only, you know, what happens at the ballot box or what happens in the legislature, but really our system is very dependent on the ways in which we pitch in and work together as a community. And one of the things that changed at the beginning of the 20th century with John D. Rockefeller was suddenly you had huge amounts of wealth being set aside into these private foundations that were working on issues that were also issues that were important in the political sphere. And so that's part of what made Congress very nervous about the idea that Rockefeller would have all this money to shape public policy.
Has the nature of wealthy philanthropists changed in any way in regards to their motivations, whether it's a self-interest or concern over the over social welfare?
Well, you know, that's part of what makes the Rockefeller story in from 1910 to 1913 when they tried to get Congress to give them a federal charter so interesting, is that when you read the debates, they're actually remarkably current. You know, people then were very worried that this money would be used to undermine the will of the people. They were concerned that maybe philanthropic foundations would be used as a kind of a shell to really achieve the business interests of whoever the philanthropist was. They were concerned that, you know, this money would be used to whitewash and improve kind of a public image that maybe the person who had made all this money had earned a negative public image. John D. Rockefeller was often described as one of the most hated men in America during the early 1900s because he had built this enormous monopoly in the oil industry. So, you know, you hear the same things today when people talk about people and their philanthropic initiatives and, you know, speculate about what are the motivations behind people's philanthropy. But one of the things that you find is that, the motivations of people who are fortunate enough to achieve great wealth in our society are complicated. Many of them have a very sincere and genuine desire to improve society. They have a desire to leave a legacy and make a difference. Many of them, once they've achieved great wealth as an entrepreneur, begin to rediscover a new way to exercise their talents within the philanthropic world. So what makes philanthropy a really interesting part of our society is it's complicated with all these things going through it.
And part of it also, there'll never be a complete agreement on how wealthy philanthropists are using their money, where they give it, and even how they give it.
Exactly. One of the really interesting things, you know, and just to put this in context, during the period that Rockefeller had this before Congress, his personal wealth and assets was equal to 1/65th of the U.S. gross national product. So, I mean, we think of Bill Gates and Warren Buffett as being rich today, and in actual dollar terms, they may even have been richer than John D. Rockefeller. But in terms of their relationship to the overall economy, it was huge, and or their relationship to the size of the federal budget. The money that Rockefeller was contemplating putting into the foundation was equal or nearly equal to an annual federal budget. Now, can you imagine a philanthropist trying to do that today? So that's where the nervousness came in. And but, you know, a lot of the things that they did, that he did through the Rockefeller Foundation, made an enormous difference in our society.
Is it sort of a partnership between government and the work of philanthropists, or a different partnership, or maybe a collaboration among a number of different entities, and help making what we call the American experiment work?
Yeah, one of the really interesting things is that philanthropy, especially from the time of the formation of the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Corporation, which people often see as the beginning of what we call modern philanthropy, philanthropy that is really trying to address the root causes of problems and bring about systemic change, that money was often used as kind of the venture capital in the social sector. So philanthropy would fund new approaches to solving problems, and then if they worked, often they would migrate to a much larger scale within the context of government or the public sector. A really great example is Rockefeller founded something in the early 1900s called the General Education Board, which sought to provide education to relatively poor farmers in the rural South to help them become better farmers. And that work led to the formation of the Agricultural Extension Service.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm talking with author and historian Eric Abrahamson. He's the author, co-author of Democracy and Philanthropy, one of six books in the Rockefeller Foundation Centennial Publication Series. And this Sunday afternoon, he's leading a discussion of the role of philanthropy in South Dakota and the U.S. That's Sunday afternoon at the Journey Museum in Rapid City. Now, when you talk about philanthropy in South Dakota today, the name that comes up is T. Denny Sanford. And how do you see his influence in the state as a philanthropist? It's more than just the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's part of what, you know, I think is so fascinating, to draw the parallels between kind of the Rockefeller experience and Denny Sanford's experience here in South Dakota, and even in Rapid City, John Bukurovich's influence. Because, you know, part of what happens is that whether you look at Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, you know, there are some fortunes that kind of exceed all others by an enormous scale. And Rockefeller used to get sometimes 50,000 letters a month, people asking him for money. And so a person like Sanford, or even a person like John Bukurovich in western South Dakota, faces sort of a unique challenge, because the influence of their philanthropy can be enormous, especially when they are when their philanthropy is out of the context of the giving of others. Then people begin to feel in some ways that they can direct the pace of change, or where social investment goes in that kind of sense. And you know, that's a rough burden for them to carry. And it's a relationship that the public and the philanthropist have to sort of work out. And people work it out in different ways. John D. Rockefeller and John Bukurovich, for example, both were very interested in creating a foundation and then empowering a board that would be representative of the public interest, and then backing away and not being very involved in the actual workings of those foundations. Other philanthropists, like Andrew Carnegie, for example, founded a foundation and for much of his life, remaining life, was very active in directing where the money would go. And so people take different approaches, and I'm not saying one is better or worse, but it shows you that philanthropy has really different character depending on the individual donor.
Is there a delicate balance between the wealthy philanthropists and democracy, and can they get thrown out of whack?
There is a delicate balance, and part of what you see at the federal level is that over 100 years, We've seen a slow evolution to figure out how the government wants to, you know, for lack of a better word, regulate philanthropy to ensure that there's a protection of the public interest. You know, we sometimes forget, for example, that when a donor puts their money into a private foundation, which is tax exempt, then there's a savings, you know, some portion of that money, depending on their tax rate, which, you know, at different periods in time has been enormous, actually represents dollars that were destined to go to the federal treasury that now go into this private foundation. So that money has a public character. And, you know, the Board of Trustees has a dual responsibility to protect the interests and desires and concerns of the donor, but also to reflect the public interest. And in, you know, kind of the changes in the tax laws and the more emphasis on transparency, we've seen government trying to emphasize the idea that these philanthropies have to be responsible to the public, even as they act with a great deal of autonomy.
We've been talking about the philanthropists with great wealth, but what about philanthropy on a smaller level, the role of maybe, I guess you'd say, the average person that has money to give, or not even money, not just money, also time? What's the role of I guess, you'd call the average philanthropist?
Exactly. Well, I think this is what's really interesting about the relationship of the American experiment to this whole sector, because whether you volunteer for United Way or whether you are able to give $100 million, all of that reflects private efforts to contribute to the general good. And that has been an important part of the characteristic of American democracy, really distinguishing it from longer traditions, for example, in Europe, where often charitable activity was something that either the government needed to take care of in terms of protecting the public good or was done through the church, but there was not a well-developed kind of civil society the way there is in the United States. And so, you know, we see here a growing, I think, movement for people to be engaged at that level. And we see more people reflecting a desire not to just give what we call charitably, in other words, meeting someone's immediate needs, giving them food today or a blanket today, but also people giving philanthropically, giving to endowments, giving to in ways that will make a permanent change or a permanent improvement in our communities. Well, and I think that's a really good trend.
So the nature of philanthropy over the years has been the U.S. has a different philanthropic tradition than the rest of the world?
Absolutely. In that sense, philanthropy is often seen as kind of having been born in the United States and migrating now to around the world, where you see much greater levels of philanthropy that look more like what we're used to in parts of the world where you just wouldn't see that 50 years ago.
Well, Eric Abrahamson, before I let you go, as I mentioned, you're leading a discussion of democracy and philanthropy at the Journey Museum in Rapid City Sunday afternoon. Just quickly, for people that are interested in perhaps attending that, what sort of discussion or debate will you be having, will you be leading?
Well, I'm going to be telling some of these really sort of interesting and amazing stories about Rockefeller that come out of the book. And then we'll transition to talk a little bit about the role of philanthropy in South Dakota and the role of the philanthropy in the Black Hills. And Sandy Deagle from the Verkurvich Foundation is going to talk about a little bit what it's like to sort of be running an organization that is kind of the leading philanthropy in Western South Dakota, and kind of the burdens and opportunities that creates.